Okay. I'm going to call this meeting of House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 6:33 p.m. on Sunday, May 18th, 2025. Present today, we've got Representative Hannon, Representative Co-Chair Shiragi, Representative Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. So it looks like we've got six people. That's a quorum. And before we start, just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. We also have with us Representative Allard. And we've got three bills before us today. That's SB 132, the Omnibus Insurance Bill, SB 39, loans under 25,000 payday loans, and also HB 104, which is Address Confidentiality Program. We also have with us Representative Bynum and Representative Tomaszewski. And so we'll jump right back into the Omnibus Insurance Bill. We left off with that last night. And what we'll do is maybe if we could address or if we could go to the fiscal note first. And so I believe, Mr. Anderson, are you going to walk us through the fiscal note on this? And that's for SB 32, the Omnibus Insurance Bill. 132.
Thank you for the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Neil Foster. We do have a new fiscal note in front of us. I'll put it onto the record. Then I do know that the division director, Lori Winghire, is here to answer any questions about the new fiscal note. Before the committee today is Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Appropriation and Allocation, is Insurance Operations, OMB Component 354, the control code WFNJM, and most importantly, that date is 5/17, the day this new fiscal note was created. The only major difference between the fiscal note from last night into today is the change revenue line. If you've noticed, it has gone up to $470,400 of change in revenue in the positive for the general fund. Any other questions could be directed to the director.
Okay, thank you. So do we have any questions regarding the fiscal note or questions for Ms. Lori Winghire, Division Director? Okay, I don't see any questions. So with that, I would entertain a motion, Representative Shiragi or Bynum? Bynum? Bynum, do you have a question?
Co-Chair Foster, do you want my stack of amendments for this?
Yes.
Before it gets to those, Co-Chair Foster, I'd like to move.
That looks like the pared down
version. Senate Bill 132. All right, let's make it official. I'd like to move Senate Bill 132, Work Order 34-LS0415/whiskey out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, seeing no objection, House Bill or Senate Bill 132, which is version 34-LS0415/W, is moved out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And so if we could all sign the committee report. And with that, Senator Bjorkman, thank you very much. I don't know if you had anything to say. We probably, okay, thank you. Okay, so let's see here. We'll move over to the next bill, and that is Senate Bill 39. That's loans under $25,000. That's the payday loans. I'd like to invite Senator Dunbar as well as his staff, Arielle Wiggin, to the table. And if you'd like to put yourselves on the record, and if you can give us a brief recap of the bill, then what I'd like to do is, let's see here. We actually don't have any amendments, so we will go into questions. So with that, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 39 was debated by this body last year and passed the State House 38-2. This is a nearly identical bill that removes the exemption for payday loans from the 36% APR cap that's currently in our small our lending act. We got a number of questions at the last hearing, and my staffer, Ms. Levy, put together some responses that were emailed to the committee and I believe are on basis now. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take any other questions and anything you need.
Great. Thank you. Also, I'd like to recognize we had Representative Stapp join us earlier. Also have Representative Holland in the audience today. Thanks for being here. So with that, Representative Stapp, did you have a question? No questions? Okay. So we have any other questions for Senator Dunbar? Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And just really quick, you know, we've been looking through this bill, and I know that we had an opportunity to offer some amendments to it. I chose not to do it at this time with the other workload that we had. We had the elections bill ahead of us. We had a lot of work there. So, but I did have a quick question for the sponsor of the bill, and it has to do with in the documentation that's provided here, there is this question that has come up, and it is said, well, it doesn't appear that there's opportunities for people that would want to use this product. And in the packet, there's an explanation that says, well, that isn't true, that there are banks. I think Wells Fargo is listed in here as being able to provide a low-cost alternative product to meet the need, and potentially other banks might be doing a similar thing. And so my question is if the market is already driving to provide an alternative low-cost option, why would we be regulating and or wanting to remove also that other free market option, meaning payday loans?
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Bynum. I think that there, as you point out, and as in the response documents that we sent, there are these additional products like Chime and Wells Fargo. I'll say, you know, the public testimony received from the pastor, for example, talking about the financial harms that payday lenders or payday loans are doing to their congregation now in the present, I think is one reason. I think those products might also be marketed a little bit more aggressively than what Wells Fargo is doing, and they have been able to sort of catch people in these cycles of debt. So while I'm hopeful that there will be a market-based solution, I'll say again, you know, 19 other states have done this. None of them have repealed it, and I think it's worth our time to offer those protections to our citizens.
Okay. Further questions? Okay. Seeing none, just want to let folks know if there were questions, we do have also should be Tracy Reno is also online, Division of Banking, Chief of Examination. So I don't see any questions. We did not receive any amendments. I just want to double check to see. I don't see anybody saying they've got amendments. So if it is the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Schrage.
Co-Chair Foster, I move Senate Bill 39, Work Order 34-LS0357/I, out of committee as not amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Check.
Okay, we have an objection. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm just going to speak briefly. I actually support most of the bill. There are a couple of mechanics that I was I kind of was thinking about offering amendments. I ran out of time to do that, so I just there's just a couple of things I think with the product that we should probably take a look at. Not super convinced that the alternatives necessarily meet the need right now, but because I couldn't get the work done, I'm going to withdraw my objection and let the bill go. I just want to put that on the record.
Okay, thank you. Any further objections? Hearing none, Senate Bill 39, which is 34-LS0357/I, is moved out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if folks can please be sure to sign the committee report. Senator Dunbar, any final words?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, and that takes us to our final bill of the day, and that is HB 104. That's the Address Confidentiality Program. If Representative Mears could please come up and give us a brief recap of the bill, and what we'd like to do is allow you to I know that we had gone through introduction and and some of the other things, but it was all kind of knitted together, maybe like a quilt, I suppose. We kept getting interrupted and kept picking up pieces, so maybe if you could kind of bring it back all together and just tell us a little bit about the bill, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. For the record, Representative Donna Mears from House District 71. 21 South Muldoon. We are not into the 70s of House districts here in Alaska. House Bill 104 will bring us to be the 40th state that provides a vital level of privacy to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking by providing an anonymized post office box for folks that are under a number of different protective orders and safety plans, to keep their location private from their perpetrators. By request of police officers and corrections officers, Alaska would also join a handful of states that provide this level of protection to them as well. I know there were some questions within the committee, and happy to take further ones.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, Representative Mears, I really appreciate this bill, and in listening to the public testimony, particularly from A&D VSA and from STAR, I can understand how critical this is as one of the tools for protecting confidentiality for those who have been, who have either from intimate partner or from others have been abused. But my question is that with this fiscal note, it feels like it's – I was looking at how we might be able to work with that. One of the states you mentioned, and maybe you didn't, but it might have been a testifier, was that one of the states had 50,000 in setup and 75,000 over 17 years is what it cost that state. I believe it might have been from STAR, but – I've been thinking about this since I heard the bill, and I guess I'd like you to comment, and maybe we need to hear from Ms. Mead, because I think about as we expand, I mean, we can right now I know it has all peace officers who choose to receive this and their families, Department of Corrections workers, and I didn't know about judges. I mean, it feels like this could be very much expanded, and I just wondered if you would comment on that, the price and how it's been for other states and what you think of given that.
I'll do my best to unpack that, so please let me know if I've skipped anything. So we really don't know how many folks would take advantage of this at this point. The protections offered by HB 104 would be to victims. Police officers and correctional officers, as they'd requested. At this point, there hasn't been a request, and we can verify that with Ms. Mead, but in the testimony in front of State Affairs, there was not a request for this level of protection to be extended to the courts and court officers and judges. So there's a relatively limited pool, and of that, really, a program like this is not convenient. It's not done for a little bit of protection. These are folks that are moving, that they are protecting so many pieces of their lives, and this is the last bit of protection for when they're registering their children for school or other things that would generate a public document in which a stalker would be able to find them. So there are some other protections in place. Sure, there are some other things that you can do, but this is those last pieces where you need an official address that does that protection.
Through the chair, thank you. I would like to hear from Ms. Mead to hear more about the population beyond the women or those who have been abused, because as I think about how this other state was just at 75,000 over 17 years, and this is a much different price tag. And so it's important, I think, that we do hear if we could imagine this expanding beyond the women and what the demand has been.
Thank you, Representative Galvin, through the chair. We also that's a little bit different piece. The bill at this point does not include officers of the court. So it would just be that limitation. But we can get that from Ms. Mead, and then we can loop back on some other questions that you had about the fiscal note.
Thank you. And I see that she's in the room. I don't know if it's possible to hear from her in terms of what she's known with the demand of whether we – I'm trying to get my head wrapped around this price tag.
Sure. Ms. Mead, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. Judges, the court system has not requested to be a part of this bill. My understanding was there might be an amendment, or there was some chatter about possibly including judges and judicial officers. That would be a policy choice that this committee could make. We have not made that request. If judges were included, I can imagine a handful might take advantage of such an option were it in the statute. I further, through the chair, to Representative Galvin, couldn't really comment on police officers and correctional officers, how many there are, or how many might want to take advantage of this program. I will say for the judges, and I don't think there is a pending amendment, my sense is that it's a fairly complicated process. You can sign up, but then there's a guaranteed delay in getting all of your mail. I don't think many judges would take advantage of it. Now, again, I can't speak for correctional officers and police officers, but, they may or may not be interested in undertaking something like this.
Follow up. Thank you. Ms. Mead, are you comfortable speaking to victims who have protective orders? I'm not sure if this is within your scope, but I'm trying to understand that what they have protective orders that they can be at clearly they're a victim at great risk, and would this be necessary in addition to the protective order? Are we hearing that that's just one piece of the puzzle and we need more than that sometimes?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, some of that involves policy, but my understanding of protective orders is, well, I know they are issued when there's probable cause to believe that this person was the victim of a crime of domestic violence or of stalking or of sexual assault. If the court does issue that piece of paper, and those are carefully considered, many are denied, so the ones that are granted there is an assurance that that person is a victim of one of those. And those folks are in a tough situation. And so I can understand the impetus for the bill. And I won't speak further on it because that's probably for somebody else to explain.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. I appreciate it.
Do we have any other questions? Representative Bynum?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I was just I've been looking at the bill. I think that the intent of the bill is absolutely in the right place. It's very well-meaning. But when I look at it, I see the cost associated with what we're trying to do here, and I don't understand the scope of the need. Not doesn't mean that there isn't need, but the scope of that need. A lot of times we see that there's a situation just like this where we think we obviously have a need, but I feel like we're trying to go in and trying to solve a problem without absolutely understanding how big the scope of that need is. And so what I'm trying to get at is I'm just trying to think of, has there been any thought that obviously we could go in and we could pass a law that talks about providing a mechanism to protect somebody's identity? I mean, there's things that I think that happen in law that say you need to provide your address or you need to provide this or that. We could fix those things through regulation or through a law and not have the mail forwarding component. And then we could have the Department of Administration set up a pilot program that says we're going to try this out for a small group of people if they have a court order. Has that been something that's actually been talked about or considered?
Ms. Mead.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I want to be clear that the court system is neutral on this bill. This isn't, and so with that, I think your questions might be better directed to the advocacy groups or to the sponsors who might have thought about alternatives to this sort of program. So I'm afraid I'm not a help on that question.
Thank you. Well, okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Bynum?
I'll hold that question, and then if the sponsor of the bill or one of the folks that are here to help her can take that on, I'd appreciate the thought on that.
Representative Mears?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum, that fix is this bill. The address forwarding is a small component of it. And one of the uncertainties, I imagine, is that we don't know exactly the uptake of folks. We've got some numbers that between the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Corrections, there's about 1,500 folks within that group. Unknown how many would take that up, but likely a very, very small number. Looking at Montana and how many folks they've got on their program, we had public testimony to that effect yesterday. But in reality, there's only about 20 people that utilize that service, address forwarding service, on a regular basis. So people, I would imagine, come and go from need of this level of protection. It does take a little bit of time for a person and a backup when they're not in the office to run a program, plus a small amount of money for that, for the forwarding. I cannot speak to the depth of the fiscal note, but I would imagine that it's an abundance of caution type number when you're looking at the program in Montana. It's significantly smaller. When you look at the state of Washington, there's what, about 5,000 people within the program and about $750,000. So the scale of the program there is much, much larger. Even though the fiscal note is almost doubled, it's an order of magnitude larger, the amount of folks that are being served.
Thank you.
Ms. Ames, did you have a comment? No? Okay. No, Ames. Okay. Let's see. I've got a couple people in the queue here. I've got Representative Jimmy Galvin and Tomaszewski. Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. I appreciate the bill sponsor, for bringing this type of bill forward. But I'm kind of concerned on one of these written, page 3, line 25 through 27, a person who discloses information that is confidential under this section about an individual enrolled in the program under of this section is guilty is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor if the person discloses somebody's address. What happens if somebody accidentally discloses the address? Does that mean they're going to be charged with a crime?
Ms. Ames?
Through the chair, Talia Ames for the record, to Representative Jimmy. A big part of this bill is security. And the state of Montana, and we use that as a reference because it's similar in population size and density, their program has only 2 people who have access to those records. And the reason there are 2 is in case somebody is out on leave. But for them, it's a very serious program, and it's just on another note about the fiscal note, they have 2 people, and each person is paid partially for this program to run it. So they have a full-time job. This is an additional duty for them. It costs $22,000 a year for the state of Montana to run, and that's paying part-time for 2 people. And again, those 2 people are the only ones that have access to the database. And funny enough, it was actually run through an Excel spreadsheet, a lockable Excel spreadsheet. It's a very simple program, and it might not seem like much, but for the people who need it, it's everything. So,
follow up. So this wouldn't affect family members or a friend of the victim who's trying to keep their address confidential, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, it's this Class B misdemeanor is for those who are running the program.
Okay.
So if they disclose, that would be a crime.
Goyana, thanks.
In the queue, I've got Representative Galvin, then Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And through the chair, I know I'm beating this like an old drum, but I can't help but be concerned about this fiscal note, and I wondered if we could speak with the Department of Administration and find out how, you know, if they talk to other states to learn how it could have gotten to these numbers, just to better describe it, and if they're on the line, I'd appreciate being able to understand that more.
We don't have anyone else on the line.
Okay.
So, on this, Representative Hennen.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I did ask that specific question of Brad Ewing last night at Revenue. And
I don't recall.
There were a lot of people gone. There was a lot going on. But I asked explicitly about the increase between the two fiscal notes of the two versions and the added numbers. Mm-hmm. And he said, basically, it was just arithmetic. We took the number it's going to cost us and treated all COs and police officers entering it, and that's the cost we gave you. I then asked in a follow-up, will they name the same level of services? Because besides confidentiality, there's also some sort of advocacy services. And they said, well, we have no way to measure it being any different for anyone in the program. Now, in my mind, a police officer and a CO are probably not going to need the same level of support and advocacy as a victim of domestic violence undergoing an emergency relocation secrecy plan, moving, relocating, hiding address, and all of those things. So although the potential could be there, I think the number is far overinflated by both the number of people who will enroll, because the department had to generate a number as if everyone eligible did enroll, and the level of support the department would have to give to all those people. So if we went to the numbers for Montana, where you might have 68 enrolling participants that are victims of domestic violence stalking orders, adding a police officer's address to it, but you probably didn't have to give them all those advocacy services in addition. So I think the department probably overinflated this of this is the most it could ever cost, but I think it's highly unlikely that it's going to cost that because most people aren't going to enroll.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. And I guess I'm not sure if you were able to ask the question of why two full-time positions were needed. And I asked that because in hearing about other states, there were full-time positions there, but they were using apparently part of their hours doing this work, that it was clear that it wasn't necessary for two full-time positions to be fully only doing this work. Now, maybe when we've expanded the population to include officers, it's a different story, but it can't help but wonder if also that may be a piece of this puzzle in bringing down the costs. And if we haven't, that's just something I would ask you if you've asked them about that part of the puzzle of this fiscal note.
Ms. Ames?
Through the chair, Talia Ames for the record, to Representative Galvin. We did not, but just to, we did a little math. And the state of Washington had the first program. They started in 1991. And the most recent numbers I have are from 2021, so it's a little dated, but they had 5,497 participants with a budget of $766,308. Dividing that by the number of participants comes out to about $153 per enrollee. And the current fiscal note for the state of Alaska would come out to $650 per enrollee. So there is a significant difference there. As far as the numbers, Representative Mears mentioned there were about 1,500 peace officers from the Department of Safety and DOC. not including Muni Police. However, Anchorage, with the largest police department, has about 400. Juneau has 50. Fairbanks has 50. These are approximate numbers. So that's another, maybe another 700 total. So all told, if all those police officers, if all those peace officers were included, it would be about a little over 2,000. And again, this program is for people that have done everything to hide their location. They're not on social media. They've moved probably several times. They've left family and friends. This is not something that somebody's going to sign up for just because they can. It's actually sounds to be kind of a pain. Your mail is delayed, and it just doesn't seem likely for people who are settled in their careers. This is, again, really a program that in other states have been focused on survivors. Some of them include other groups, but not peace officers, nothing of this magnitude. Alaska, we do things a little different, so we're including our peace officers. But again, I don't see the number of enrollees being that high or costly.
Okay, through the chair, if I may. I really just have a comment. I think that for those who need this service, wouldn't matter the price for me. It just wouldn't matter the price because I know this could be truly life-saving. That said, I appreciate hearing what the cost estimates are in other states. I'm not sure why. I know it's more expensive to do business in Alaska, for sure. But I think in this case, this may be a bit of an overreach on adding extra costs when they did this estimate, and I'm sorry for that. That said, the rest of the system, the rest of this bill looks very solid to me, and I thank you for the work. And I'm very supportive of this program. Thank you.
Okay, Representative, also want to let folks know that we do have Ms. Lori Morton in the room also, and Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I just want to go back to the details of the program itself. So the participant signs up, and all their mail is directed to a anonymous post office box. And then all of that mail is sent to their real address. Is that kind of the way it happens?
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski, there are regulations that need to be promulgated on the limitations for that. The intention is just to be first-class mail. But yes.
Okay, follow up.
Follow
up? All right. So, yeah, I was just reading the fiscal note also, and it says up to 5 pieces of mail per month. And that seems a little low to me for some reason. I can get 5 pieces of mail in a day. But you had a stipulation and a regulation on that. So where does the rest of their mail goes? Where to? Directly to them? Or how is that going to work exactly?
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski, Donna Mears, House District 21. The mail that would generate a public record is mail that would need to get forwarded. So let's say you're getting correspondence from your child's school. That would go to this anonymized P.O. box. A letter from your mother goes straight to you.
Okay, and one more follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you. That kind of clears up that a little bit. I'm looking at also on the commodities at $2,400 to buy an ID card maker. Doesn't the state already have an ID card maker in every DMV that we have? I guess I don't understand. I know it's making a special ID or not including their address on that special ID, but couldn't just the standard ID maker, and you may not know this, that's probably a better question for the department, but it seems like getting a new ID maker just for this seems a little bit redundant when we have a lot of ID makers.
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski, yeah, I cannot speak to the details of the fiscal note.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't have anyone else. Representative Bynum.
Thank you. Again, so, yeah, I appreciate the program. So when I'm looking through the bill, we have this really big fiscal note here, and it really defines the, you know, hiring all these people to run this program. But when I look through the bill, on page 2, I mean, to me, the biggest part of this bill is page 2, line 11. It just says establish and administer an address confidentiality program under AS 4421022. And then when we read the rest of the bill, the bulk of the rest of the bill is a new section starting on page 213, and it really rolls all the way through page 3, most of page 4. A lot of that has to do with adding police officers and police officers, corrections officers with definitions. And then there's basically a new section added on page 4, which is more of a regulatory component. So the bulk of this, the meat of this bill really is, other than saying we're going to have a mail forwarding service, is really just saying establish and administer a confidentiality program. So I'm not exactly sure from a regulatory perspective or what law this, or how much authority this law is going to give the state of Alaska from preventing people from being able to use your true and real address when you need it, other than you can put down the address of this mail forwarding services or service. Now, those mail forwarding services are things that are commercially available now. I can go buy one for $10 a month or $25 a month, which will scan all of my important mail, send it to me. Travelers use it. There's a lot of folks in Alaska that use it because of the nature of their living condition in the state or where they live. So I'm really trying to understand in the bill the authority mechanism that it puts into law that allows for me, if I'm needing this service, to not use my true and actual address and use this mail forwarding address. So is that one line on page 2, 11 and 12, establish and administer the address confidentiality program under the statute, is that what's giving the department all of the authority to set regulatory rules in place that would then allow for that individual using the program not to use their true address on court documents? Or I don't know of all the places. I'm not exactly sure. You guys would know best, but I'm just trying to understand what actual authority this bill is giving for us to modify law when somebody's required to give their actual and true address to use that alternative address.
Representative Mears?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. For example, if you look on page 3 of the bill in the new section that establishes the address confidentiality program, a state or municipal agency shall allow an individual enrolled in the program to use a post office box designated by the department as an individual's mailing address. One example I have is my son's at college, and the municipality of Anchorage does not allow a absentee or a mail-in ballot to be mailed to a post office box. This would allow that to happen.
Okay. Follow up. Representative Bynum.
So I see that page 3, line 12, I have it highlighted here, and in here they say that that enrolled in a program to use a post office box designated by the department. So this, to me, I guess I'm trying to understand, is you're saying that this portion of the code gives the authority for them to use this in lieu of their true and real address? Is that what this is trying to say?
Through the chair.
Representative Bynum?
Yeah, I'll follow up. So it's just from when I read this, and I'm not a lawyer, but when I read this, it just says shall allow an individual to use a mailbox enrolled in the program to use a post office box designated by the department. It doesn't necessarily say that they have the authority to use
that mailbox in lieu of a true and real address if the law or if the courts or whoever it is that's requiring them actually provide a true and real address.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I'm not a lawyer either, but that's my understanding that this section of the bill is what would have someone utilize a post office box instead of a real address. School registration is a big example. There is anonymity, there's the ability to conceal your address when you're registering to vote, but something like sending out a mail-in ballot, that needs to be something that needs to get sent to this post office box instead of a real and true address, so that would allow that. And the ID cards that Representative Tomaszewski was referring to with the new machine, those ID cards would be that proof that folks were enrolled in the program and would be waived from the requirements of providing a real and true address and be able to use this post office box for these portions of real business that would generate a public record that would reveal their identity.
Thank you.
Okay. I think what I'm going to do is I'll set an amendment deadline for tomorrow, which is Monday, May 19th at 5 p.m. If folks can get those either to my staff, Mr. Brody Anderson, or our finance clerk, Helen Phillips. And if folks have more questions when we get to come back to this, before we go to amendments, we can certainly entertain questions if folks have more questions. Want to make sure that we've got a good comfort level with the bill. So with that, if it turns out that we get to tomorrow and get a sense that nobody might have amendments, I think there are two in the hopper, but if there are no more, and we end up having a meeting tomorrow, we can always bring the bill up again tomorrow. My plan is to, we did not notice a meeting for tomorrow, and so we'll go ahead and recess tonight's meeting, and with no set time, it'll just be a delay to the call of the chair for now. It's possible that the meeting could be before the floor session tomorrow. We have floor at 11 tomorrow. If leadership lets us know that they're working on deals with the Senate, we need to come back. And it's possible that it might be after floor. We don't know at this point. So out of end of session, everything's kind of moving quick. But we're going to go ahead and set aside HB 104 for now. So Representative Mears, thank you very much. Are there any questions with regard to moving forward? I don't see any. So House Finance will be recessed at 7:15 p.m. Thank you.